Sunday morning, we welcome the bench coach of the Giants, Ron Wotus. Well, good morning.
Good morning, Marty.
Well, there we go. So Mark Gardner's going to be on me. I didn't turn your mic on. All
okay.
Right.
Well, good morning. We'll start over.
Right. Mark, you didn't hear that. All right. First of all, coming into the park today, and I get your thoughts on this. They were mowing the grass today, mm-hmm. and I know they do that a lot, but the smell of the grass and seeing the ballpark, I'll tell you, there's just a moment you say, wow, this is nice. Do you have those moments when you come in?
Yeah, you know, not every day, but there's times that when I come in, instead of going through the tunnel here, I walk across the field, and it's a beautiful day. And as you said, it's peaceful. That's what you like about it. We're used to being at the ballpark when, you know, there's 40,000 and the energy of the game. In the quiet before the game, there's some nice moments, you know, whether you're thinking about, you know, things other than baseball or the game today. It just has a different feel about it. And there's no question that the smell of green grass brings you back to your youth and playing ball and, you know, just looking at the park empty like that. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it smells good. I like it. There's just something about it. How about the first time you ever walked into a major league park or a big park? What did you think?
Well, first time was when I got called up with the Pirates, obviously. I was a little bit nervous, to be honest with you. You know, I think most players have the jitters. You know, as 40,000 people yelling and screaming, you get inserted into the game, and your nerves are there. There's no doubt about it, and it's a lot different than the ballparks that you're playing at in the minor league. So it's quite a sight, and the energy and everything is different about the big leagues the first time you walk into a park.
Yeah, there's something about the smell of the park, the look of the park. Yesterday I walked in with the beer kegs and the fries, and I don't know, tons of water. I don't know, they must be selling like gallons of water here, an amazing amount, but it's a feeling when you walk in. All right, yesterday, interesting game, I thought. It was, for me, it was sort of the classic baseball game. You know, the starter gets knocked out, long reliever comes in, you're down 3-0, you haven't hit yet, and you get to, you know, get the guys going, and a lot of clutch hitting again.
Yeah, good team win. You know, you always say, let's play 9 innings. You know, you play 9 innings, but the point is, you know, keep your energy up. The game's not over till the last out. And Colorado certainly knows that feeling because they play in their ballpark in Colorado, and the game is never over. They could be down by 5 going into the last inning, and they feel like they have a chance to win. Well, you know, even though this park is different, that's the way you want to play. And that was it. We were down by 3, haven't had a chance to hit. Timmy gets hit with the line drive. He's knocked out. Petit comes in, does what he's supposed to do. And then as the game continued, a lot of big moments. The guys kept playing, kept battling. We got the big hit. Decisions in the game were made. And as we said, a good team effort, everybody contributing in a game where you have to play to the last out. Because even in the ninth inning, Colorado had their big boys up with the tying run at the plate. And, you know, we were able to get the win.
It always seems that way, doesn't it? Doesn't it always seem that way that they flip the order that next time and here they come against the closer?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, when you're in the eighth inning a lot of times, you know, you're watching the lineup and you don't want to see a walk or you don't want to see a guy get a hit because you're looking at that lineup for your closer and you want to stay at the bottom of the order in the ninth. But as you said, you know, invariably they get a guy on or two in the eighth and then it rolls back around and now they have their, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 hitters coming up. And it's dangerous, especially this club. You know, the middle of their order, any one of those guys can leave the ballpark. So you want to keep the tying run from coming to the plate. And they had that opportunity yesterday to win that game or tie that game because the tying run was at the plate.
Yeah, good game yesterday. Good game. Part of the fun of the game is the things that happened during the game, at least from our standpoint, maybe not for you. But Posey hits a shot. I thought it was going out. Fan leans over and obviously touches the ball and then bounces back and gets away from the outfielder. You got two guys on. They're running on the play. They score. And all of a sudden, here comes Walt Weiss with a nice slow walk coming out. He couldn't walk any slower if he walked backwards. That's the only thing he could do. So he comes out and talks to the umpire. But you take me through it because it wasn't really a challenge, was it? And they did resolve it. What happened?
Well, that poses another question. Just briefly about the challenge, you know, I think there should be somewhere on the scoreboard a light that says whether the team has used a challenge or has not used a challenge.
Okay.
So you know. Not that you can do anything with that, but I think it would be good to know. I'm assuming they challenged the fan interference or asked them to look at the fan interference. But I'm not sure why, because, well, you have the opportunity if there's fan interference in the umpire's judgment. It's a right. ground rule double, but the guy that was on first, Duffy, it's the umpire's judgment on where they would place him. So there's a possibility that he could be placed at third base if, in the umpire's view, he would not have scored. Well, he was running on the pitch. He clearly would have scored, and the umpires made the right call by giving him home plate. So nothing changed. It was fan interference, but nothing changed on the play because the runner would have scored, and the batter, Posey, would have ended up on second. I believe they they either asked to review it or you know, use their challenge. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, the umpire then came into your dugout, and I wasn't sure what that was all about. What was he doing? And they got on the phone. What was
yeah.
that all about?
Well, he came into the dugout because he looked up at the scoreboard, and we had taken the run off the board. So he went up there to let the press box know the run did score, put okay. the run back up on the board. It was confirmed fan interference, but the play stays as stands. There's no changes to it. The runner scores, and the batter runner is at second base. So okay. he was just confirming that. When he was first running the dugout, my fear was he was going to try to put Duffy back at third base.
I thought he was looking for him.
Exactly. So did we. And we started to get a little bit upset with that. And that wasn't the case, because that would not have been the right call, putting Duffy back at third. He clearly would have scored running on the pitch. He was coming home easily.
Funny. All right. I'm glad you clarified that. I didn't know where he was going. I thought maybe he was going for a drink. I didn't know where he was going.
We got concerned as well when he started coming into our dugout.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. When I was down at the Fall League, when they first put this in experimentally down in the Fall League, and there was a play like that, the umpire did go in the dugout and get the guy and put him back on second base. It was a stolen base that they had called him called him out, and they was reversed, and they got the guy and put him back.
They did, yeah.
I saw it happen.
You see him going to the dugout to tell players, hey, get back to third base, because as a player, you're not going to volunteer going
you're
out
hiding.
There.
No,
yeah, you're hiding.
You should
be
in the clubhouse at that
right.
point. All right, Ron Wotus with us, the bench coach. All right, the fan interferes, and we've gone through this, and there's a couple of aspects of it. From your aspect, number one, it changes games. You don't like it. From everyone else's aspect, what do you do with someone who does that? And, you know, my thought was, we did the show last night, I said, if you don't want to throw the person out, comes to the game, a guy with his wife and two kids, and you don't want to, you know, take the whole family and ruin them for the rest of their lives of, you know, they hate baseball, I thought maybe move them to some part of the park in the upper reaches of left field or right field in a row that says, I interfered with a play, and I'm going to watch the game from here.
Well,
you know, something to signify, not just moving them back four rows, but you're up in the dunce
yeah.
cap, you know?
Right. Well, it's not an
what
easy
do you think?
It's not an easy answer, and I don't think I have a better solution to it. You know, I tend to agree with you. As difficult as it is when fans reach over and interfere, I mean, that's the way these ballparks are built. They're right on top of the action. You don't want it to happen, but obviously it's not stopping. Everybody still does it. And despite fans knowing they're going to be thrown out, probably the majority of them don't even realize if they reach over that they're going to be thrown out of the ballpark. I don't know if they do. So, you know, many of them do, I'm sure. But they just react, and they just want to touch that ball. I don't know what the heck it is. Maybe the fans can tell you better, guys that touch balls, why they do it. I don't have a solution for it. But I don't like the fact if you're there with your family and dad reaches over and you have three kids or at the game and now they're all thrown out of the ballpark. But I guess they just throw the dad out. But if the dad's gone, the kids can't stay, right?
No, right. He's sitting in the car for about two innings, and he says, all right, everybody get out of here. We're leaving.
You maybe know? That's a poll question you should
right.
have out there and see what the fans come
okay.
up with.
All yeah. right. I like that. We'll do that on the show tonight, see what the proper penalty should be. All right. Interesting. Clint Hurdle said something this week which was interesting. And he said, look, I don't want these guys watching so much video during the game. I want them on the front step of the dugout. I want them on the rail. I want them watching the game. People are disappearing during the game. I want them here watching the game. Is this too much video? And how do you guys deal with it?
Well, I think that's, you know, been the question ever since the ballparks have been built the way they are and the video has come into play. Look, you know, the players today watch a lot of video. They watch themselves. You know, the era before, we didn't have video like that. You know, you barely knew your opponent, but now you can watch your opponent prepare for the game. You can watch all your at-bats. There's a lot of things to look for. I think what Clint is talking to, which we struggle with here and have had issues here as well, is guys during the game, in between innings, going down, watching their at-bats. When this ballpark was first built, we had a video room because we thought it would be helpful down off the batting cage where you can go look and look at your at-bats. And we ran into the same issue, is a lot of times the players were going down there to look at themselves, look at their at-bats too much. And then the other thing they were looking at, as much as they were looking at their at-bat, was the call correct?
Yeah.
The umpire's call. Was it a ball or a strike? And it became to a point where they were putting more energy worrying about the ball or the strike and getting upset with the umpire instead of staying in the moment. So you have that side of it, and then you have the energy side of it. Guys come in the dugout. You know, we got some guys on there like Hunter Pence right now. He's on the bench. He's cheering on his teammates. He's trying to get guys riled up into the game, and you need that energy. You know, it's a long season every day, so that energy is important when everybody's watching the game and in the moment. A lot of us certainly believe that that's the way to go about it. And, you know, we watch some of the great hitters come through here. And, you know, the one that comes to mind is Barry Bonds, obviously. He never went down and looked at his at-bats or anything. You know, a lot of us feel at that point, you know, your preparation is done. Watch the pitcher. Watch the game. Stay in the moment. And don't overanalyze. You know if it's a ball or a strike. You could feel if you took a bad swing. So a lot of this stuff is feel. I think this generation, they want to see a lot. And we went more on feel.
Mm. Okay, well, Hurdle said it, and he said he wants his team on the bench with him, watching. So, you know,
understand.
Pittsburgh's one of the, I'll tell you, when they came in here, I told you, this is one of these organizations, from the majors to the minors, they're on top of everything. Interesting to see how they do it.
Yeah, well, you know what, you know, I think a lot of people probably feel the same way, and probably a lot of players would feel the same way. I think, you know, I've talked to players over the years where they get caught up in looking at the video during the game, and it's, you know, it's you know, paralysis by analysis.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, letting that go, you know what you're doing up there, stick to your plan, and then work on things after the game or look at things after the game.
You got a third baseman who hasn't had many games in the major leagues, Matt Duffy, who looks like he's getting better every game. I know you work with him a lot. Throws to first, though. It's a different throw for him, and he's making a star out of Posey. I'll tell you that. Posey's starting to pick him.
Yeah, Buster's done a good job on the balls in the dirt. Very good. You know, he's not over there a whole lot. It's not like he's over there every day having a chance to work on those plays. And he's just a natural. You know, he gets over there. I remember one pick, I think it was in L.A., that he made a very difficult pick. And he came up with the ball. So good instincts, obviously great hand-eye coordination. He's a natural over there. And he continues to do it. And that's good to see because, you know, Duffy or Craw or Panic or Casey, any of these guys will tell you, when you have the confidence in your first baseman that he can pick the ball, you know, it takes a little pressure off. When you have the other, when you have a guy that you have to throw it perfect every time, it gives you a little more pressure. You know, I better make a good throw, and that's not a good feeling as an infielder. You want a guy like that over there, like Buster and Belt and, you know, JT Snow and Will Clark and all these guys. Get the ball over there. If they can catch it, they're going to catch it.
Who was the best defensive first baseman you ever saw? And now you go back to the Mattingly days, Keith Hernandez and people like that, and JT and different ones. How about you?
It's hard for me to say. I think you mentioned a lot of the guys that I saw. One guy we had here with the Giants coming up, they mentioned J.R. Phillips.
Okay.
Was a tremendous defensive first baseman. Keith Hernandez, obviously, back in the day, could do everything. You know, he would throw to the bases. He would throw to second, be good on the bunt play, and also slick fielding around the bag. The difficult thing for me is I didn't get to see all those guys every day, you know. So when you get to watch a guy every day, I think you really appreciate him more. So the one guy that I did watch a lot every day was JT Snow. He just did not make errors. And there was nobody better than him when the ball was in the dirt, or his footwork and his ability around the bag to come up with those throws. And one thing that he did different than a lot of guys, he'd go down with two hands a lot on a pick. You know, he was either going to, if the ball wasn't going to get by him, he'd block it and pick it at the same time if there was a batter runner on to make that play. You know, a lot of guys go with the one hand. If they come up with it, they come up with it. But he would go down with two hands a lot of times. And, my God, every time he went down there, that ball went in his glove.
Yeah, I always felt watching him every game, we'd go out there and watch him. I felt he was like a shortstop playing first base. You know, those kind of hands.
Right.
You'd see something just about every game. What about Duffy's throws to first? They're a little bit erratic, I think. Is it footwork, just getting used to the length of the throw from second or short? Now he's at third?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things that he's been working on, I think, that makes him a little more accurate with his throwing, staying a little more athletic. He tends to straighten straight up and throw the ball down instead of staying on his legs a little bit more and carrying the ball. You know, he's done a very good job at third base with the limited experience that he had. It is different for him. He played a lot of shortstop in the minor leagues. And then, of course, in the spring, he was playing more short and second. Played a game or two at third. Now he's over there every day. It's just part of being a fielder. You know, I mean, not every throw is going to be perfect, but there's a couple things that we've been working on to improve his throwing.
Yeah, I see what you mean by the way he handles his body.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Mike Schmidt or Robinson or some of the great third basemen. Maybe you're right.
Right, and that's what happens. Sometimes he straightens up and he throws more downhill instead of staying on his legs and carrying the ball, and he's been working on it.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, Ron Wotus, the professor, the bench coach of the Giants. You've seen two players. I like getting comparisons with you. You know, in your long career, of course, being part of the brain trust of so many great teams. Jason Schmidt and Madison Bumgarner. Now, Bumgarner's got 14 strikeouts, and I thought, you know, look, it was a crazy inning, and, you know, it got away, and all of a sudden he's not getting a decision and all that.
Right.
But he's close to the record of 16 strikeouts by Schmidt, and I said to myself, well, Schmidt was always a guy, he wanted strikeouts. I mean, he said, I can control the game by striking people out. Compare the two, Schmidt and Bumgarner. You had them both.
Yeah. Well, obviously they're both, you know, power pitchers, and they both have great stuff. Jason Schmidt used to throw the ball in the mid-90s, and he had a swing-and-miss fastball, and Bumgarner has the same. And Schmidt's secondary pitch was the changeup. He had a tremendous changeup, and he got a lot of strikeouts on the changeup. And he threw more fastball changeups than anything else. You know, Bum has such good, you know, movement and angle on his fastball. I mean, he gets great angle, very tough on left-handers. So his stuff, their stuff is similar in the fact that they're going to get strikeouts. And I've never asked Bum about it. I'm sure with a man on first, and he'd love to sink a ball away and get a double play ball. I think all pitchers would love to be able to do that. But I bet you if he has a guy with two strikes, he has the type of arm and weapons. You know, he throws that cutter in where he feels he can get the strikeout as well. And that's huge to have, both Schmidt and Bum, because when you have a man on third base with less than two outs, you need the strikeout. You don't want the guy putting the ball in play. So, you know, they have that type of stuff, and they're both outstanding pitchers because of it, because they can strike people out.
Did you think of Schmidt as a strikeout guy, though?
Well, he did. I mean, he had a strikeout fastball and a very good changeup, but he didn't necessarily have a nasty slider like Rob Nen.
Okay.
You know, Rob Nen, you saw him, and he threw 95, and his slider was just unhittable. That was really the strikeout pitch, because most pitchers that you see, they have power fastballs, but, you know, the number one thing a major league hitter can do and when they get to the big leagues, and what keeps them in the big leagues and what gets them here is hit the fastball.
Yeah.
So even if you have a great fastball, it still needs to be located well. But if you have a great secondary pitch, like a nasty slider, you typically look at that and say, wow, you know, that's a strikeout pitch. But you see the good fastball pitchers as well. Look at Kershaw, right?
Yeah.
He's got a swing and miss fastball. There's a lot of guys that have that power fastball.
Wow. All right. Ron Wotus, boy, always learn something from the professor. We've got a couple of fielding questions to ask you. The little rundown we had the other day, it looked like a lot of throws. The pitcher got involved.
Oh, that's good. I was hoping you were going to ask me.
All right.
That.
So we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll go to school with the professor here on this Sunday morning right after this on the Sports Leader.
KNBR 680.